Good afternoon and welcome to the Home Run with Helmut. And okay, let me put this in the language of someone, colleague of mine. I won't mention with Hermta Nadwaita here on Eagle FM. And as always, well, we are your drive time show. If you are new, welcome to the team, welcome to the family, and we are all here as always until the hour of six. I was plotting the murder of the two of you. But relax. I'm not threatening any of you listeners, just my colleagues here at work.
Decisions. This is not Sherlock Holmes. But anyway, good afternoon, dear listeners.
Yeah, it's a Monday. It's an Easter Monday. And it's not a very good Monday if you're Catholic like Dwight.
Don't worry, you know. All of us, you know. We do get somewhere.
Anyway, from time to time.
From time to time.
Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of time.
Yeah. Uh-huh. For most of us.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so, well, it's a Monday, and I don't like Monday, and Dwight have pointed out, several times that he likes Monday. Reasons I still don't understand. Like, of all days of the week, why Monday?
Is what?
Why?
The passing.
You're away. The one that likes Monday.
Me?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no. Not that I say I love Mondays. It's just a usual indicator that my disposition is a little bit more rosy on a Monday as opposed to on. Do you know which day I hate?
Uh-huh.
A Sunday.
Why?
Because a Sunday tells you your weekend is done.
Oh.
A Monday just starts the week. Well, technically, you can choose, how your 7-day week flows and primarily how your 5-day. Well, obviously, a 5-day week is standard, Monday to Friday.
Mm-hmm.
But you can choose how your 7-day week starts. Does your 7-day week mean the end of the previous 7-day
yeah.
period? Or it can be the start of it. Now, usually, Helmut, Sundays are not the best. In Namibia, Sundays are not the best day to look at. I have to say Namibia because there's something wrong with Namibians and Sundays. Sundays and Namibians just don't gel. Anywhere else in the world, even on an island nation, well, it's not a nation, it's a territory, like St. Helena, where they technically only have, 5,000, 10,000 people living there. I think those Sunday mornings on St. Helena would be a lot more rosier and probably a lot more...
5,000 to 10,000 people?
Or is it almost 50,000? It's close to 100,000, man. It's below 100,000.
Okay, but...
The inhabitants are technically all related to each other.
That was where I was heading. I was like, man, this is a lot of questions.
Well, it would be a lot better even on an island nation... On an island... it's not a nation also. On an island territory like Reunion, mm-hmm. which I believe, probably because there's a lot of French-speaking people, it would be a lot more rosier as well.
The problem is... There's a lot of French people. And the stereotypes that... the French stereotypes.
What? They eat a lot of baguettes and croissants?
Not that.
No, I was staying away from the one that you're...
I know. Believe me.
Yeah, I'm literally staying away from that one. But as
long as they eat a lot of baguette.
Well, ultimately, we're nowhere in France for today's discussion, dear mm-hmm. listeners. And obviously...
We are nowhere outside of Africa.
We're still in it, but we're outside of Namibia for today.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it's a Namibian connection that went there.
Yeah.
And just to highlight, guys, specifically, we've got to apologize to you, dear listeners. Somewhere, once again, we submitted, the necessary discussion and content for our poster. It just didn't show up. So just to highlight.
Sounds like my Mind the Gap poster of yesterday, but okay.
Also didn't show up, even though you submitted it, like we did.
Oh no, we are very Swiss at that.
Yeah.
But, let's dive in because, the discussion we have is on the, is on the standing committee report. And,
yeah.
We're back at, a series of reports that were produced by the parliament. And, obviously the new parliament have inherited.
Yeah.
And, This is a series of all outstanding reports that you can find on the, you know, on the parliamentary website that you can just read to enrich your own knowledge about what type of visits, or more like what type of activities your parliamentarians, aka the people that are, you know, in, you know, in public office representing your interest, what type of activities are they, you know, are they engaged in?
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it really helped us to ask, you know, genuine and straight to the point questions. Because some questions I think are very vague, take for example, what's your take on corruption? Okay, I can easily, or basically anyone can answer that question. Anyone can answer that question. But what's your take on take like a specific event like that's coming out of a standing committee?
Yeah.
According to one report published by this standing committee, It said this and this and this, and then you can base your question on that. It's very authoritative, very easy to deal with. Like, what does the report say?
Mm.
Then I can give you my professional, or you can give me your professional, or we can have a discussion around it. Instead of just scratching our heads and going, what do you think about this political party or this politician? And just because you belong to a different political party, or because you just don't like the person personally,
yeah,
you start cooking up thoughts about why they are not the right person for whatever office they are, you know, they're about to be sworn into.
Or the person starts from a pretty personal perspective, which is pretty narrow as well.
Uh-huh.
Like you said now,
yeah,
you know, they speak from an emotional perspective,
yeah,
or in most cases, it just jumps into complete slander in one direction,
yeah,
because you can't prove any of the particular discussions.
Yeah.
However, there are some good things that actually come out of this report, Helmut. And I was afraid actually when we mulled over this report's particular contents, whether or not it would be a little bit out of our depth in terms of the legal discussion of it, even though I would rely on you for that matter. But you know what's the nice thing? This report, there's a dimension on it that actually speaks towards some of the core issues that still persist in Namibia, and which also the new administration and the new parliament that has been sworn in have all cited. Specifically, the notion in terms of the bread and butter issues discussions.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, to steer as far away from maidenspeeches.com.na, those things will still persist this week, Helmut. There's a whole bunch of new people.
There's a whole lineup.
Yeah. And even though on Wednesday, Thursday, the 24th of April, President Nandi Ndaitwa will give her first State of the Nation address.
Yeah.
The unfortunate, and I will use this word unfortunate, the unfortunate thing is there's still a whole bunch of MPs that have to come with my maiden speech for 2025 in the 8th Parliament. Was it 9th Parliament? No, 9th Parliament. No, 8th Parliament. Yeah, it's 8th Parliament of the Republic of Namibia. So, from that particular indicator, maidenspeech.com.na will still persist up until Wednesday at least, because obviously in Thursday's session is when you're going to have Q&A with the president.
Yeah.
Obviously, that will be one of our particular focal points. So you and I, we technically can't actually plan for that discussion because
it's going to come in. Anyway.
It's first going to be the president's particular State of the Nation address, even though she's been literally in office for a month. Literally a month, 30 days. Yeah, 32 days, spare change. She's literally been in office. Her cabinet has literally been in office for like 2.5 weeks. I mean, State of the Nation address could probably, the State of the tongue in cheek, probably could also just be called Maiden State of the Nation address. Because literally this is now the president. Technically now, if she has had to take stock of things, I mean, yeah, we'll have to see what's being said there. However, if we leave all the maiden speeches, discussions and so forth, I hate that word. I really
maiden speech.
If we leave all the maiden speeches and yeah, all that particular scenarios, and the other side shows, for example, for some of the reports and stuff, and still the budget debates that still have to continue because the budget debates are not done, Helmut. The downside is this report actually speaks to the particular bread and butter issues, which are economic factors that can impact people's or that wherein people's, the ordinary citizens, you know, like human rights can be impeded, that ultimately sort of like, how can I call it, sort of like negates them from deriving any direct particular benefits. Now, there's a term that is used in this section. I think it's under section 3.3, where they had to go look at the Commission for Human Rights and Administrative Justice. Now, if you don't know, dear listeners, our discussion was about is literally about a field visit or a field trip. We call it a field trip, but it's actually a benchmarking trip that the Standing Committee on Legal Affairs and Constitutional Matters paid to Ghana in July of last year, 2024.
Yeah.
It's from the previous National Assembly, guys. It's not from this current one. Hence, the report was only released on the 13th of February this year. Now, in this particular field trip, because it is a field trip, the committee wanted to meet the peer committee, the committee that has a similar role in the Ghanaian parliament on the Ghanaian side. They just couldn't meet that committee, apparently, because they could only meet the Commission of Human Rights. They could only meet the Commission on the Commission of Economic and Organized Crime. And they could only meet the Law Reform Commission in its own right. The nice thing, Helmut, that actually springs up from all of this. Now, I will start backwards to front, because on the bread and butter scenario, the Commission for Human Rights and Administrative Justice aims to actually, and it's outside of a ministry, it aims to literally advise the whole government, all cabinet ministers. Mm-hmm. So you could view this, the person in charge of this commission, this commissioner, to almost be on the level of a slash, it's a mixture between, if you look at it from a Namibian perspective, in terms of the role of a minister and an executive director, this person would have sort of like a portion of both roles. They could be appointed, it seems, and this person has got very much to do with everyday administrative matters in its commission. Something similar to like the Auditor General, the Attorney General, the Prosecutor General of Namibia. All of these, you know, ultimately, all these figures, which can be appointed by the president in Namibia, they do have a direct influence and impact on the day-to-day matters of, for example, like, you know, the various mandates that each of these particular agencies have. The nice thing from this agency in a Ghanaian discussion is this agency can go and tell a cabinet or a cabinet minister or ministry, listen, you need to ensure that social grants in a Ghanaian sense reach Ghanaians. You need to ensure, a Ministry of the Education, that your policies literally speak towards the impact that it has to make on the ground. And so forth and so forth. This commission can actually do this. This commission can also advance restorative justice, which is a discussion we heard last week with the vice president's particular discussion. I remember that theme we did on was it Thursday or Friday, the one about
On civil societies and women's role in power.
Yeah, in terms of
both, you know, present, both past, present, and future.
And also taking this reparations, this AU reparations theme
forward.
And
you remember they had they had their AU level first ladies organization come up with first of all they elected like new leaders somewhere in February and I think I don't remember who the president is, but the first lady of Angola is the is the vice president of that organization. Now they decided to come up with a theme that is not very far, basically in line with the 2025 African African theme, which speaks to more like a global and a colonial discussion, like we're gonna have to talk about it. And this is regarding obviously reparations. Reparations not only for Africans but also Africans in Africans in diaspora, where where the vice president here at home basically made it clear that reparations is more than just the monetary aspect, which is what we all think when we talk about reparation.
Yeah.
The money just, you know, sprint. Yeah, the mind just sprints straight to the money.
Yeah.
But it has to do with, you know, first of all, you have to acknowledge that you did all these crimes and then apologize. Then we start talking about reparations. It's just, you know, the economic problems. And, you know, when someone says reparation, everyone thinks, okay, when are we getting paid? No.
Helmut, I went and looked at, in that particular discussion, for example, in that thing about, no, but it is right. It is about being paid, about payment.
Yeah. Like,
look, reparations is payment.
Look, I find it very fascinating.
Yeah.
That, I think this is, again, is something that we don't stress because, okay, you remember when we had, who's this guy, Melchizedek here,
yeah.
And he had to explain very simple words that we all thought we knew, like cybersecurity, antivirus, and all those things.
Mm.
And everyone, you know, when you meet a specialist of a field, they start telling you, well, actually, it's not USB.
Yeah.
Because, well, that's the port that we are talking about. And we, you know, for all of those that are not tech savvy, have taken them with the word that means the port, and then we gave it to a device that enters the port.
Yeah. So, which is a flash drive.
Exactly. Now, that is something that, because we are the majority, we just, you know, go along with it.
Yeah.
Now, reparations, and as we saw, like one of the referenced example in the reparations discussion is usually Israel and Germany, and every time that discussion is had, what comes up is not how no one really dive deep into the discussion of the negotiations between Israel and Germany and how the Germans will face that to acknowledge that they committed the crimes in Auschwitz, for example, and how they apologized and then which was followed by that, decades worth of payment. Every time we talk about the reparations between Germany, you know, the reparations of Israel, of Germany to Israel, we just go to say that, look at the money that Germany paid.
No, but it is true. Do you know what I did yesterday?
Yeah.
So I watched a particular discussion, and it's obviously within the realm of, for example, what this commission in Ghana does, human rights and administrative justice. Now, it's safe to say we probably don't have an agency like that because it's supposed to be, in the Ghanaian sense, the Ghanaians were asked, you know, so did they have an ombudsman? Because we have an ombudsman.
Yeah.
And they said, yes, they did have one.
However, past tense.
And they realized that an ombudsman cannot deal, the ombudsman's office in Ghana could not deal with the bread and butter, immediate impacting discussions happening on the ground, which is probably something akin to what we also have seen in Namibia.
Ombudsman is not loving this report.
No, because it's in this report. And the nice thing is what the Ghanaians highlighted, they've had to change their laws because they realized certain agencies, the law which empowers said agency was not adaptive enough in terms of the highly adaptable environment that Ghana finds itself in.
Well, in other words, maybe this whole ombudsman works for others, but it didn't work for them. So they had to restructure it and come up with something entirely new.
Well, they actually did this. The ombudsman in Ghana was actually absorbed into this new commission, this Commission for Human Rights and Administrative Justice, so as that this commission can have an overarching mandate where you find a ministry, that agency is literally also touching base in that mandate of that
ministry. All across ministries.
All across. So if you've got a Ministry of Health, the commission has a department or directorate that looks at a health scope because you have to look obviously at what your constitution says.
Yeah.
And that's obviously where a ministry's particular role emanates from, because it would be something, for example, like ensure that the livelihoods of everyone is insured. So how do you ensure livelihoods? You look at the health component. So the health component falls under which ministry?
Yeah.
It's a Ministry of Health. And what do we do from there? Okay. Now we need to have this agency also have oversight in terms of what this ministry has to do.
Yeah, but that's one thing I also found amazing in the report, and I couldn't help it but start comparing it with with what we have with the Central Procurement Board.
Yeah,
yeah, Because, you know, the central procurement body is basically this body that, you know, that has to worry about procurements.
Yeah.
So instead of the Ministry of Health, for example, worrying about their, you know, worrying about procurement, or the Ministry of Defense worrying about procurement, and Ministry of Education,
worrying about procurement,
how about just shift that responsibility to one body that have to worry about procurement for all of them?
It has its own sort of like departments, and it does its own tallying. However, each of those ministries have to give its reports in terms of, we have these procurements.
We have these procurements to make.
We will be submitting
them. Now, can you do the vetting process so we don't have to worry about it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that we don't get sort of like hit with, yeah, those kinds of accusations. If you guys don't know Afrikaans, that what I just said is literally, you are not serious. It's those kinds of accusations that come about.
So all the, look, that's very, look, now that you put it that way.
No, but that was usually what the finger pointing into. And they tell you, you're not serious. And after that, you are not serious.
Yeah.
Then they start, you know, start hurdling the insults in that direction.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So in that scenario, it looks like what you explained just there about it. However, remember, I started from reverse to first, meaning I started with the last particular segment that this committee went and looked at.
Yeah.
So they went for, and this is the broader reaching and broader impactful discussion across Namibia as well, is that we have communities that don't understand their rights, for example.
Yeah.
You might find yourself in a communal land area, you don't understand your rights because you know, all you've been told is that a headman or there's this particular tribal chief or tribal ruler or tribal leader specifically that's supposed to represent your interests, but you see that this guy is getting payments from the minister, from the government, which is a ministry. And he's the only one in the community driving double cab buckies. And you are asking the question, where's my double cab bucky as well?
Yeah.
Even though you don't know what's going on. For example, Helmut, remember also the tin mining, not the tin mining, the lithium mining discussion as well.
Yeah, there's a report about that.
Yeah. I don't know if you did one about that.
No, I didn't.
Okay. We can keep that for another discussion. Don't worry. However, and that's obviously another standing committee that went out to that. That same lithium mining discussion has popped up time and again, time and again, time and again. Those guys in their own right have also realized that that was a discussion between a traditional leader and the mining company. And the traditional leader didn't say anything to the community members. Just to give you insights. Now, it then ropes in, firstly. It ropes in.
First of all, that was a bad idea.
It is a bad idea. Because now it looks like the traditional leader does not speak to his or her community. Second thing is, for example, you start off also with, and this is a well-documented thing that took place in 2022 or 2021, former Minister of Environment as well, Boambi Shifeta, had to go also to the traditional authority. I went to the area last year specifically in a way, just outside of Alphas. But it's literally, What is that traditional authority's name? But anyway, he went there as well. The accusations were reports that were compiled, and it was submitted to the ministry directly, with the minister having to come out himself personally and tell them, listen, I'm pulling out receipts. We are paying monies into this particular bank account. And if you ask the question, so who's in charge of this bank account? No, it's the traditional leader and his family members. So the reason why I'm positioning that particular thing is like,
which is why I said in the beginning that that was a bad idea.
Yeah, and which you and I have count time and time again have proven on this particular platform here on the Home Run, trickle down economics does not work. Even if you give the cash directly to impacted groups, there is still a notion of, well, to use George Orwellian illustrations, some animals will believe that they are more important than the other animals, and thus they will create hierarchies of who gets what. And that, unfortunately, is the bare bones illustration that comes about. Because you then get a scenario of some people deciding, you know what, there's this free money coming in, we're just traditional leadership, we don't have to do anything. We didn't even work for the money. We're just getting this money just for the mere fact of being a traditional authority, which actually makes it pretty easy to establish a traditional authority. Maybe I should establish one myself.
Okay, now you're giving me ideas.
And then I can go and take the Orange River
as
traditional territory. But anyway.
You know, when South Africa shows up.
No, they can't, Helmut, because they recognize my surname.
No, so, they'll be like, you know what?
And then Lesotho will have an issue, and then Namibia will ask, hey, Owens, what mark you like? And Botswana will also go like, hey, guys, come on. Let's be neighborly neighbors here.
Yeah, next thing you know, you have the Zimbabwean president because he's the one heading SADC.
He's also asking for calm and peace.
Okay, easy.
And it's literally a cross-border incident that it will probably be a cross-border scenario.
Yeah, it becomes a diplomatic issue like really fast.
But it actually connects one group of people with the surname on one side of the river and the other group of people on the other side of the river with the same surname. And yes, in Namibia, in South Africa, my surname, Helmut, is literally a traditional authority. Just having my surname.
Oh, man.
Hence the reason why I said it's problematic, but yeah.
No, the thing is, when you, look, if you ever try that and you start kicking the heck out of each other, you know, SADC will come in and next thing you know, they say, you know, there's an urgent meeting at the African Union comes in, the UN comes in.
And then they first have to designate who is the real traditional leader of all these people with a surname. And then one guy from Free State gets up.
Yeah.
Because that's where this guy is apparently based. He's in Free State.
Yep. The Berlin Conference guys will be with their popcorns like we did that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks to us.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to take a quick commercial break in 15 seconds and we'll continue on the other side. If you just tuned in, you are listening to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight, and we are looking at the Constitutional and Legal Affairs Standing Committee's benchmark visit to Ghana.
Are you still buying data hoping it will last? Then switch to Paratus. Buying gigabytes is so old school. With our mobile LTE prepaid packages, you take charge as we invest in time on our network, enjoying the freedom of uncapped data. When you buy a 1-day, 7-day, 14 or 30-day package, you get uncapped data usage for the duration of the package, no matter how much data you use. Explore our range of Paratus mobile LTE prepaid packages and enjoy the speeds of up to 10 megabytes per second. And most importantly, remove the uncertainty about how long your data will last. Contact us today at 083-300-1000 or visit our website at www.paratus.africa/Namibia. Terms and conditions apply. Always prepare.
Welcome back. It's 5 o'clock on the dot. Benchmark visit to Ghana where a lot of, we have several standing committees in parliament and they are all engaged in both, local and international visits.
And remember that the new ones have to be appointed. Because the previous guys came from the previous parliament session.
I'm not sure if it's the economic and public administration, but one of the standing committees is also has an outstanding trip, I think, also to Ghana.
It's not just that, Helmut. They have to now select new members for all these standing committees.
For all the standing committees, because, all the guys that were having, having those positions in different standing committees, are not there anymore.
Yeah, they're not there anymore.
That makes sense.
And it's obviously also a complete reshuffle. For example, some of the MPs, because there's now new MPs, there's also less ministers like last time. Because if you had to sometimes look at how, for example, the ruling parties, their seats in the National Assembly was arranged.
Yeah.
There where the ministers sat. And remember, there's 21 ministers and they have deputies. There where they sat, Helmut, literally they took up the whole opposing bench on the one side. That's how many people the ruling party had that were just cabinet ministers and deputy ministers. Back benches, most of them were the guys in the standing committees.
Mm-hmm.
Most of these guys are in the standing committees, the back benches from the ruling party. And then yet most of the opposition guys were on the opposite end. So now we're obviously going to see who would be the new guys, taking up, positions in the standing committees, because that process still has to start after this month, because I don't know if I can take tomorrow another session of maiden speech scenarios and the likes. And
I can only count like 5 contributions on the national budget. One has come from the PDM president himself. There's been another one from another MP from the opposition parties. There's been like 3 more, and that's it. That is basically it. So that process still has to start. Obviously, in this week, we'll see the president's first maiden State of the Nation address. Sorry for going low, but that's what it will be. And yeah, then obviously we have to see how business then flows from this. What is really concerning, Helmut, has been what I left us off with in terms of when the standing committee in July last year went and asked that Human Rights and Administrative Justice Commission. So what did they have to do? So the first thing they had to do, Helmut. Now, remember, we are working literally through 3 commissions that this committee had to meet. This first one that I believe is actually supposed to be the biggest one, but it actually follows on after the first commission that our standing committee met, is that this commission realized that human rights is such an important aspect of Ghanaian society that you need a commission. Straightforward, you need a commission that needs to ensure that human rights abuses are not perpetuated, they're not crossed, they're not sacrificed. For example, we obviously saw, and this has been a well-documented scenario, unfortunately, what the Fishrod scandal has caused, it has created much negativity in terms of, not because of the accused, the negativity economically, if, for example, in the households of the fishermen that were let off.
Yeah.
There has been well-documented scenarios in terms of what those fishermen had to undergo, which technically speaks to human rights abuses in a scenario where they were deprived of being able to earn a living and to continue and support their livelihoods and their loved ones, which is a pivotal scenario as well, which is very pivotal, Helmut, because it actually also emboldens the notion in terms of you need to look after livelihoods. You can't just come and look after a right of someone, but the person is being negated on another right, for example, to access to employment or access to the opportunity of being employed or access to the opportunity of using intellectual property that they probably thought up and they can't make money from it, or someone steals it and stuff like that, which is pretty pivotal, because they literally told the commission, well, we realized the Ombudsman of Ghana was not powerful enough, didn't have much powers, so we had to absorb that guy in a new commission. That ombudsman is now directorate, which I probably now see probably should be the scenario. Hence, this was a benchmarking discussion. Yeah. It brings us to the next one.
Oh, no, I'm still on human rights.
You're still on human rights?
Yeah.
Because remember, they literally split the next commission visit they had, which was actually the first one, was a law reform commission.
Yeah, look, communicating the information.
Yeah.
Yeah, to the, in the very same way that we want, take, for example, materials or any type of product that we want to reach the recipient, that, you know, recipient in need. Take, for example, there's something, you know, we have drought relief, or you have some kind of, distribution, packages that are being distributed to a specific recipients who are impacted by some natural disaster or climate related things, like take a flood, for example. What every public leader basically wants, for example, here in Namibia, that's the office of the Prime Minister. What they will want is, it's safe to say that what they will want is this product to reach the right recipient.
Yeah.
And just like you glossed through the lithium mining. So, you know, it doesn't matter who you give it to. At the center of us all is greed.
Yeah. What spurs us all on,
at the center of us all,
it's do you know how truthfully that hits, Helmut?
Yeah.
There's this weird documentary that my sister watched recently. She wants me to watch it as well, but I don't want to watch it because it's as bad as the pig boot shooting scam.
Oh yeah.
Now remember what the pig boot shooting discussion also was technically.
Yeah.
You could technically also see these were people that were told you can invest with us, and they're going like, oh okay, and then they just send money to a person they've never met.
Then they tried several withdrawals at, you know, small amounts. It works. Yeah. You know, they're like, well, I can trust this.
Yeah. And then from there on, they're just like, whoop, gone with the money.
Yeah. Once the money reaches a certain level of, a certain level, the accounts and the contacts, everything disappears. Yeah.
Yeah. This particular discussion was about the crypto scams that exist and that there are guys in America or around the world who do this repeatedly. It's known as pulling the rug, which was the other thing that you and I also partially discussed. Pulling the rug is the best known way, which is technically tied to Ponzi schemes. You let the money build up.
Mm-hmm.
You've got all these people just giving money, and then they just pull the rug. Phones are unreachable and everything. And three of the guys was interviewed by this journalist, this investigative journalist. Three of the guys that ran a recent scam. And she had to go to them. She asked them, why did you do this? Don't you feel anything for the people that you have impacted, the victims?
Like some kind of moral compass?
Yeah, she asked that. And those guys, the one guy just answered, now they're all sitting on with, you know, one guy sits with a monkey mask, the other guy's a donkey mask, and the other guy's a clown mask.
Makes sense.
Yeah, literally. And they literally, the camera is like recording them. And the guy, one guy is like, you know what, these are just greedy gamblers. That's why they trusted us. That's why they gave their money to us. So the first mistake, and that's why all law enforcement and even the financial law enforcement or financial authorities in Namibia always warn you. It's up to you. You are the last person to check and fact check and make sure and verify what you do. It's safe.
And then it turned out to be safe. How is that a problem?
Exactly.
And it turns out to be safe. Take for example, if it worked out, you'd not be here asking for help. But now that everything went south, oh man, this just, you're right. That's gambling.
It's gambling. So yeah, when you look at the scenario from that, it really hits hard.
It really hurts because back to my, office of the prime minister example. Take the money, for example, international organizations like the IMF can give the money to a minister, for example, and we saw this to be the case with Mozambique.
Mm.
And the money was used for personal, personal, enrichment. And take that money, give it to regional governors, constituency councillors, give it to individual home, find every breadwinner in a house, give them that money.
Yeah.
Chances are very high most of it is not going to reach the kids. Yeah. It's either going to be gambled or it's going to be partied out. So as much as we like to point all the fingers to public office bearers, we know that deep inside, if we were in those positions, chances are really high we'd be doing the exact same thing. Now, the communication, now that more like, that trickle down of products or, I'm picturing, more like trickle down of information. Because, the Ghanaian government obviously tried to stick with ombudsmen, and then they realized, we have a goal. And then there's this, foreign method that we are using, and it doesn't seem to work.
Yeah.
Now, it's safe to say they had no choice but to revamp the whole thing so that they can make it, suitable for the Ghanaian environment. Because, take for example, if we were all to copy and paste Albania's form of energy, of electricity generation, boy, we would be screwed.
Not Namibia. Well, today Namibia would be screwed, but not Namibia.
Let's just install. Okay.
So we have the sun. Remember, they've got hydrogen.
Let's just copy and paste. We are not editing in the sun here.
Oh,
we just say,
No, Helmut, we would lose every day. We can't even install anything on the Orange River.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, so That's you see, the sun example he just gave is a perfect, you know, it's a perfect way of of creating something that's suitable to your environment.
Yeah.
And we went through this when we were talking about Albania's very a green source of electricity generation, because one, they are naturally blessed, their terrain is naturally blessed with surface water. So coming back to the point I'm trying to make here is human rights must be defined, because once again, there is a conflict with a traditional, or what we call traditional norms.
Yeah.
And, traditional norms and the civics way, Western, more like adopted legal way of doing things, because the laws that we're using are all, well, Roman Dutch and a little bit of English.
Yeah.
So, at some point, they seem to conflict with our traditions and norms. And sometimes you now have a lot of people going like, well, but I didn't do anything wrong. Take, for example, one of the story that I remember reading a few days ago was a man raping his wife. And he then go through the comments and went like, well, but he's married to her. I'm like, okay, you're missing one thing. You're missing one thing.
She does have rights.
Exactly. Yeah. And also, the definition of marriage.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, then if, not marriage, the definition of, of rape doesn't say whether you're married or not.
No.
No. And, according to the Combat of Rape Act of 2000, any person, husband, boyfriend, it doesn't matter. Any person who intentionally under coercive circumstances, it doesn't matter whether you just met or you have been married for 10 years, as long as there is coercion in.
But Helmut, the word coercion even means like you are trying to coerce the person who's doing something, so you're using duress.
Yeah, it's basically some element of force involved.
Yeah, but it sounds like duress. Duress sounds a little bit more softer than saying I forced you or I applied force. Mm-hmm. You know, like in physics, you bumped against the ball flew somewhere else, you
changed direction.
You changed somewhere. Now, the particular discussion around coercion, I know coercion is sort of like a, what's that other English word that they say? It's not, it is euphemism. It's a euphemistic term. Because if you identify ultimately what rape usually, let's just take that notion of the word rape. Rape usually includes a lot of violence. There is violence. If you go for any of the softer, warmer, fuzzy feelings of relationships. Oh no, there was love. No. Mm-hmm. Usually in rape, if you can even bring in a police officer, they will tell you rape always includes, it's sexual violence.
Yeah.
That's what it is. Let's just call what it is. Now, there is another famous discussion. It's actually a court case that's currently ongoing. I don't know if you've known about the French woman whose husband drugged her and then he would allow other men to rape her.
I remember reading about that.
Yeah. Which is a complete, that story sort of like shook my core, right? Cause I was like, how in what world as a husband do you do things? But anyway, this happened in France. The court case is still ongoing, dear listeners.
Yeah. I looked at that and went like, so.
Now,
let's say if she cheated on you, would you be angry? Because, like, okay, you know what?
Yeah,
please.
Yeah. So the downside of such a scenario is also that she didn't consent. So we also have to look at the most
because,
basic
The keyword there. That's the keyword there.
Consent.
Consent, yeah.
Yeah. So consent is now obviously a newer term if you now look at the types of societies we live in. Because remember, if you also try to look at back at certain particular things in certain African countries, for example, how the notions of community building is sometimes viewed. Yeah. Remember, we just had a discussion just last week about, you know, women and the reparations discussion going forward, this African agenda. And in most cases, and this is what I did not share with the listeners. Helmut, can I share with the listeners? Ultimately, the exchange between the vice president and another audience member. Can I add that? Okay, so dear listeners, I didn't bring that audio, even though I did record the audio. So what happened, Helmut, was this is not a discussion in terms of looking at the role of a national leader representing national interests, even though this discussion of, for example, in Namibia's case, the Namibian genocide discussion seems to be only isolated to specific groups. Now, I am on both sides of that fence specifically. Why? I recognize that there obviously is a document. There are documented extermination orders that exist that explicitly just mention two groups.
Yeah,
that's it. Secondly, on the other side of the fence is that there are so many other particular, what you call that thing, scenarios and groups of people that have come about just from this chapter of human history in Namibia. Meaning you have, for example, colored and buster communities in Namibia that ultimately were products ultimately of what happened during the genocide.
Mm-hmm.
Another scenario is ultimately also understanding that there are so many other people that live, for example, the descendants of what's the guy's name? Kurt von Francia, who had, I think they're a hero, but they had to apologize for the statue standing here at City of Windhoek.
It was the guy
on the horse.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't the guy. It was the guy standing with his hand.
Yeah, the statue is now replaced with him. You know, still have a lot of questions, but yeah.
But it's not the writer Denkmal. It's not the writer. The guy at that was there right next to Windhoek High School, not that statue.
Mm-hmm.
That statue is in commemoration. Technically, it's a victory statue. That Reiter Denkmal, the one that's now in the fort, it stands in the fort of Alte Veste. So, if you look at those particular scenarios, we come to the Q&A of this discussion, and a gentleman gets up, and he was sent by the Nama traditional leaders. And this gentleman gets up and he says he didn't actually want just to provide a Q&A because he was actually sent with 21 pages. Now, the first instant that I thought that ran through my mind was, so you were sent to come and talk down to a vice president? Let me set the scene, dear listeners. Obviously, so who's the vice president in Namibia? Vice President Lucia Witbooi. Now, Lucy, if you don't know who Lucia Witbooi is, dear listeners, then I don't know where you've been, primarily because the surname Witbooi must tell you how historically powerful, technically, this person is. Because this person's ancestor was literally the guy that waged...
That's on your 200 bucks. You're welcome.
And your 50. And your 100. He's literally the guy that, you know, showed a whole bunch of fingers, you know, gang signs to the Germans. Usually with bullets. But anyway, so in that scenario,
I have so many things that could get us fired right now.
Now, I won't jump into the nuances in terms of between the you know, traditional leaders of the South. I won't get into the nuances in terms of, because many people would think, oh, but they're all together, but it's not the same picture. For example, you won't call all Awambo peoples the same people, because they also have different
subdivisions. They also within that umbrella Awambo.
They also have different traditional leaders, which are usually divided as kings and queens.
Yeah.
So it's literally, and we know there's a lot of Namibians in the country that love being ignorant. They just say, ah, you know, everyone just looks the same. No, it doesn't work like that.
I mean, well, Europeans showed up in colonial times and basically lumped all the black people under one blanket, but we're the most diverse people under the sun.
Yeah. Plus, they also employed divide and conquer tactics.
Yeah.
So, it's apparently a playbook that comes from the conquistadors, the Spanish.
Of course, it's going to be the Spanish.
Because apparently, the one
you,
guy...
You guys. I know you guys live in the same community, but you are a little bit more special than those one.
The conquistadors were just 3,000, Helmut. Taking down at least an empire of 10 to 13 million people. This is what this one guy explained. Because it's a documentary video I watched just last night. He explained it. How did a group of 3,000 guys...
Psychological warfare.
All they did was they told a bigger group, yeah, you guys are more important than the smaller groups.
Then you let them kill themselves for you.
Yeah, internal fights.
Yeah.
And in that scenario, because the Aztecs or the Incas or the Mayans... They didn't have any regard for gold because to them gold was just decoration.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the conquistadors were like, hey,
now we're going to have a lot of that.
Here's a lot of gold. But anyway, beside the point. So the discussion of last week, obviously, where this gentleman showed up, because this is now the discussion in terms of identifying, you know, ultimately, the role that women's leadership will now play in African affairs every day is that we still have communities, for example, like in Namibia, that are highly patriarchal. Highly patriarchal. Now, the downside is, Helmut, I was at that SGBV.
Okay, now I get it.
I provided SGBV, the SGBV protests coverage of 2020 here on Eagle FM. I provided that coverage. And in most cases, the urban societies are a little bit more liberal in terms of you have women-led households that exist. You have women that can earn money. They have jobs. They can apply for jobs. They can set their own futures. But then the discussion, which is literally based upon the notion of human rights, which we started off on our discussion.
Mm-hmm.
And then imagine a setting in the rural areas of Namibia. A setting where specifically women will be told, or they'll be read a passage out of the Bible like, yeah, Eve was created out of Adam's rib. Now, you and I, we categorically know, Helmut. You can't even explore that dimension. Do you know, I had to sit at a wedding of a friend of mine, like, just before COVID. Not just before, like, way before COVID. Because mm-hmm. this guy moved to Germany with his wife. And literally, the uncle, the pastor, which is his uncle, gets up and says, you know what, guys, so you're now married, but you always have to listen to your husband, no matter what. It's not, but the talk doesn't bounce back to him, the guy.
Mm-hmm.
Nor does the talk even say, even though it says here in this book that you were supposedly made out of his rib. But you know who your family is. How were you made out of his rib?
Well, it happened about 3,000 years ago. Not important. Yeah, and I saw going to hell. But anyway.
Yeah, I'll probably join the comedy club. That exists there. Look, but still.
Look, if the devil is really, he's so proud of us.
I don't think we will get awards for participation.
Nah, not a chance. That's why I pointed out the human rights part in the report, and the fact that it was done by a constitutional and legal affairs committee. Because, we are all Africans. Yeah. We know that, on top of the adopted civil structure that we use, that dominates basically because the president is not running with, it's not running with what her traditional authority or traditional norms say.
Yeah.
She's running the country with what the constitution say.
Yep.
So more often, we find ourselves in some legal trouble by using that as, an excuse. And also, if you look at the hierarchy of courts, the Supreme Court wields the ultimate power.
Yeah.
So, this is again where you find this conflict of, I think we are trying to find a common ground, and make, civil law and traditional laws coexist. But more often, they are conflicting because, in the same way, yeah, they're conflicting and a lot of us are finding ourselves into trouble.
Yeah.
Like the, like the husband wife rape example that I just used. Because, if you are brought up in the environment where you are told that, you are a man, you can do anything you want.
Yeah.
A woman here is just your subject at your, at your disposal. Now, unless for some reason, you take that and make it the ultimate authority that governs the entire country, which is not going to happen because the way that it's done in my culture is not the same that the way that it's done in the Shuambo culture is not the same way that it's done in Damara culture, Nama culture, Zambezi culture is wildly different. So you can't take the norms, the traditions norms of one tribe and then, impose it on everyone. That's not going to work. So that's where I think it's safe to see that, and also appreciate that you have, foreign and adopted though it may be, the civil legal structure makes it, has this uniform structure that applies to everyone irrespective of your traditional, of your traditional norm. Again, I know we have traditional courts and traditional everything, but again, the highest court is not a community court. is the Supreme Court.
Nor is it a traditional court.
It's not a traditional court. Yeah. It's a high court for criminal cases like rape. And if, you know, if you for some time or for some point, you know, if you feel like you are not heard properly in high court, you can appeal to the Supreme Court. Both of these courts are running on constitution, not tradition or religious norms. So when it comes to, you know, so when it comes to these things, it's always better to find out what does the constitution say?
Yep.
Because even though in our tradition, take for example, in my tradition, I'm taught that I'm the ultimate, owner of the house. I can do whatever I want, including punching you in the face. When the police shows up, they are not going to say, "What does your tradition say?" No.
The police are going to say, "Well, this person has human rights."
You
cannot just beat up anyone because there's actually laws that you can be hit with in terms of contravening these particular laws. So yeah.
Yeah. So, this is one of those things that I think, again, I applaud the, was that the same committee, the Constitutional Legal Affairs?
That's what I want to ask you.
Yeah. They went to Zambia.
They were probably the same guys that went to the Zambian.
Yeah. That went to Zambia.
Field trip. I call it a field trip, not a bench.
To look at how the Zambian, how Zambian, community courts, complements the, the High and Supreme Court.
But still, you can even see that those community courts have to be in line with the constitution of Zambia.
Zambia. Yeah, for them, there are a lot of representatives, a lot of figures that you find on the highest level of community courts are appointed directly from the executive office.
From the Ministry of Justice of Zambia. And that's ultimately the scenario because you don't want people jumping on somewhere saying, yeah, this is a kangaroo court versus something else. Because primarily, you have a government. You have an elections for president every year.
Yeah.
It's not Mickey Mouse stuff, but ad break.
Do you urgently need cash and happen to own a car? Creditors delaying and contractors need to be paid? When life throws you a rainy day, AutoCash got your back. Park your car and get up to 45% of its value within 45 minutes. No payslip, no bank statement, just the car. Moolah when you need it.
Easy money.
Call us today on 061-400-676. That is 061-400-676. Auto Cash, it's that simple.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Welcome back. We are Africans. Believe me, we totally understand. We have traditions, we have norms, but then again, just ask yourself one question. If you do something because, your tradition or culture dictates so, ask yourself one question. When the police shows up, are they going to look at what tradition says or what the constitution says? More often when the police shows up, it's because of what the constitution says. And you better hope the constitution is in line with your tradition on that point, because if they are not, you're cooked.
The funniest thing primarily, Helmut, is obviously, when this discussion jumps up, this discussion of human rights, it seems like not many people engage about it, because obviously you have to look for a true impactful event, for example, like what COVID was, which impacted everyone's human right on movement.
Yeah.
And everyone's human right to be able to move freely.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, yes, dear guys, I am a pro-vaxxer because I did take the vaccines. Mm-hmm. But one of the discussions that obviously always was touted was, do not move around unnecessarily in order to avoid
spreading the infection.
Spreading the infection. and that you've got to get as much fresh air and exercise. And what was one of the concerns from specific by the police is that everyone was suddenly walking around outside. And they were literally
practicing. And everyone wanted to go and exercise.
And they were all practicing a constitutional right.
Yeah.
Meaning, yes, I mean, under the particular, and one, remember, this was a state of emergency back then. So certain particular rights obviously would be impeded on as people. But the weirdest scenario when one of the interviews that I did back then in 2020 was literally before he became Inspector General. He was Commissioner of Kumasi Region. That's now Inspector General Joseph Sikonga. I called him one day, got an interview from him in terms of just, you know, what is his thoughts about people moving around so much and all these people that are suddenly now doing exercises outside every day. He said, yes, it's good. It's good. You know, I myself, and the nice thing is, when I also go and go for that walk, I see the whole community is walking. Which is literally a particular scenario that people could exercise, meaning they could exercise a specific constitutional right, the right to movement. It's just, it was under conditions. Don't do it excessively. Don't try and go to other people's homes and stuff like that and so forth. But however.
Look, the thing is, one thing that we basically have to understand about, civil law is that, it's very technical.
No, it is.
It is a very technical, I think I've told you this story, just about that, say, you and the listeners. Of one story that's still generating a lot of, a lot of discourse on whether or not it's true, coming out of New York, USA. A lawyer that buys, a box of cigars and then insures it for fire. After insuring it for fire, I know, cigars. Who insures cigars for fire?
How are you going to smoke it?
Exactly. He insured them for a lot of things, damage-wise, which included fire. Then after that, well, bro went, smoked all of them, then went to claim insurance that his cigars were damaged in a series of small fires.
Was he going to call, did he call the police and get an affidavit that he was the arsonist?
Yeah, I know. my favorite part was, in a series of small fires. And then, well, they go to court.
Mm-hmm.
They go to court and he wins the case. The insurance company pays him money.
Yeah.
Because, well, obviously the court ruled that, you did not explain in your contract as what constituted fire.
Yeah.
That's the loophole that he used. They were not specific that, only this type of fire, but if he smokes them, that doesn't count. That loophole is the one homeboy used and then smoked all his cigars, then went to claim insurance that his cigars were damaged in a series of small fires. And, well, after he won the case, the insurance company went and filed a criminal case accusing him of endangering the public by intentionally setting off a series of small fires.
these guys
were basically playing Jim and Jake with the American Constitution. Now,
endangering the public with small fires.
Endangering the public by setting off a series of small fires, which is illegal. Now, if you look at it, that's true or not. The story plays on technicality, and basically just goes to show how technical the whole system is.
Yeah.
You don't think if that story was if that story was true, you don't think the judge was laughing? He was laughing, but the guy filing a case made a legitimate point, there's a principle in law of contract that states that, when there's a flawed, take for example, there's a flawed statement, a statement or section in a contract, that is,
what, like section 19 of,
take if that was a contract. And UNESCO and the Arts Council found themselves in court.
Yeah.
The section 19 will be interpreted against the National Arts Council because they are the one that drafted it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
they allowed it for it to be there.
Yeah. It's not, so basically the principal state that if there's a fault in a contract, that fault statement is interpreted against The person that drafted the contract, not the person that received and signed it.
Yeah.
So, as much as you can say, well, that was just one dumb person. Well, bottom line, you drafted the contract. Mm. You forgot to mention what constitutes fire. Bro, when they smoked it, and it was like, okay. Now, that shows basically the technicality of the legal system we have adopted. And I think a lot of us have not caught up yet, which is why we keep asking ourselves, like, well, she's my wife. Bottom line, because everyone, when they bring up the, you know, the combating of rape, the question they will ask is, was the coercion used?
Mm.
If the answer from her is yes, you can be married for 10 years. You'd still be in legal trouble.
Yeah. And obviously the other thing that counts against sort of like ensuring that justice is served is obviously also the high rate of reports that were later on withdrawn by the victims. Which is another discussion. Obviously, we are in another
whole different.
We're in another particular realm of discussion there, dear listeners. But obviously, it then flows, Helmut, from this the Commission of Human Rights and Administrative Justice visit that this committee did. It flows into the Law Reform Commission that Ghana also has. Now, first things first, dear listeners, to tell you just a little bit of a story. Namibia's Law Reform Department is actually in the Ministry of Justice. Not separate. It's not a separate agency that has its own budget allocation and the likes. It's in the Ministry of Justice. So it's once again a department, directorate, whatever you want to call it. In Ghana, they had to divorce.
So they had it the same way that we have it.
Yeah.
They decided, you know what?
Let's divorce it from the Ministry of Justice. This agency can review independently laws. Their widespread reaches, meaning even if, let's say, new crimes are or pop up and the police don't have a law or a piece in the constitution or an act or something that covers this potential new crime, for example, these guys can research and make recommendations for new legislation to be adopted or to expand on existing legislation or to amend existing legislation so that they can be abreast and ahead of times as it happens. Which is a unique thing, Helmut, because that discussion and the first commission we started off from, the one on human rights, they actually would feed each other in terms of how do you address new challenges with old laws that probably cannot cover these new challenges. Remember what happened with in our discussion that we had last year with the, regarding the various particular sort of like internet-based legislation, where we looked, we continued benchmarking against the GDPR,
the European one,
the EU's GDPR, the general rules on digital and something.
Basically, you know, flows over my head. But one thing we noticed is that EU is a bunch of countries, not one.
Yeah.
So the GDPR is basically drafted as a template that, they drafted it in a very awesome, which is why we were talking about it, because we were looking to basically use their template.
No, but everyone, Helmut, even internet commentators and even internet, or YouTube, law, commentators say that thing, that piece of document
thing is a legal masterpiece.
It's the best thing you can use against internet companies or companies like IT companies and tech companies. Because the moment a tech company, if you Google search that tech company in, let's say, Germany, that company should have registered itself in Germany or in the EU. So whatever service that company dispenses in Europe, That service can be taxed. That service can provide the necessary rights, digital rights, to any EU citizen. But now try and go out of the EU. What do you find? You find gaps, or you find nothing.
Like loopholes left, right, and center.
Exactly.
One interesting thing about the EU is that I think, and I have to cook the Americans on this one.
Mm.
They use their experts.
Who, the EU?
Yeah. Because to draft a document like that, You need a group of experts.
No, but they also had they also needed trade experts, because this was not just legal experts.
I know, yeah.
Remember that all those fines that they apply, like that astronomical fine that Google got last year or the year before.
Yeah, throwing Apple for Siri and stuff.
Apple was told the year before, mm-hmm. Standardize your
remove the lightning, bring back the C-type.
Yeah.
Charging port, yeah.
Standardize your charging ports for your products in our zone.
And when they say that, they're not joking.
They're not joking, because they were on the level, and that's ultimately what also emboldens Indonesia to do the same thing. And what they were talking about there, which is another thing of rights or human rights, is the protection of consumers. Because what happens, Helmut, for specifically if you, with what you perceive to be a legit enterprise, sells your product, you buy the product, you get delivery of the product, meaning you take ownership of it, and then the thing doesn't work, and then this guy tells you no refunds.
And also,
but you didn't know that the thing is broken.
No right to repair.
You didn't know this thing was broken. But you don't want, because you're assuming also there's a guarantee and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy tells you, no, I don't have a repair policy. And then you say, but you sold me a broken thing. Now, you would obviously require, what do you call it, an avenue, a discourse, an avenue for recourse, because you would need help and support. And what these guys realize is that there's a lot of human rights transgressions taking place in the realm of trade.
And there is a lot of human rights transgression going on there, in terms of, especially when it comes to disposal of not only the sales of contrabands, and aka black market, of which also I came across a documentary that coming out of Kenya, that said stories of young people, because of economic economic difficulties, and their parents are finding out only late that, take for example, your child, becomes sick every now and then. You take them to the hospital only to be told by doctors that I'm not sure if you are aware of this, but your son is missing a kidney. He's missing a kidney.
I think I saw.
That means they were, they worked with some scammers. They were communicating with. They met at some hospital and sold their kidney, and which is a very, that's one sad story. But both tax avoidance and tax evasion, for example, it requires legal and legal and economic experts for you to pull off.
Mm.
You want to meet with someone that knows how, take for example, was that in 2012 or when was that, 2012, 2019, somewhere there, the whole Apple thing, a lot of accusations were fired against Apple for using, for using the Netherlands and, I think Ireland to avoid paying tax.
Oh, yeah, because they've got, certain particular.
They exploited, tax loopholes. And, one guy in an Al Jazeera documentary points out that, tax avoidance, put in mind that multinational corporations were evading tax.
Mm.
And then they realized, you know what? There's actually a less legal way of doing it. Instead of under-reporting your income so you can pay less tax, of which sooner or later the law is going to catch up with you, then they start investigating, then you're in legal trouble anyway. What they decided to do is you get a bunch of experts so they can go through the law of, the law of your country and find out loopholes in the, take for example, the American laws, and find out which country do you want to set up your share, take for example your holding companies in.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that you can report your income as if it's coming from a country with less tax, like the Bermudas. And then you can bank it there. You find some of these tax havens, then operate your business there.
Or you register the main company there, but all the money is also there.
That's the thing. The thing is, the guy points out that there are actually a lot of tax loopholes. There are a lot of methods that are being used by multinational corporations. Now, again, you can say, well, multinational corporations are evil and all that. Bottom line is, they are being ran by people. And as we have established, greed is at the center of us all.
Mm.
Take Helmut, make him a CEO of Apple, and, well, you are going to see the exact same thing that's being used by, you know, this, you know, you're going to see him doing the exact same thing that the guys in power are complaining, you know, the guys in power are doing. So, as more often, it's just greed.
You would go crazy with that pay.
Yeah.
That Tim Cook makes.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, he's, you know, he's, he's, okay, hang on a second. I think his salary was reduced to, what was that, like 90 or 30 million, something. You know, it was reduced and not full. And like, hang on a second. His salary was reduced to what now?
He's still making a lot of money.
That's the reduced amount.
He's still making a lot of money.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, a ton of it.
Yeah.
But, look, until we get to the point where we have to, you know, come to the realization that, if we want to build a kind, you know, okay, first of all, the first thing we have to do is study things and then know how they work before we start complaining. Because more often, every time, you know, like we're complaining with a, you know, 5-year-old shoulder, complaints like that will only end up with us in court.
Yeah.
With a lot of money on lawyers and then losing. And look, a lawyer is just a one. You're a client, so as long as you are paying, your loss is still a win for him because bottom line, you paid.
Yeah.
So.
Or you'll still be paying.
Understand? Oh yeah, you bet. Now,
you'll still be paying.
Yeah, just understanding the bare basics. Unless you have a lawyer and a money at the disposal in this economy, I don't know. So. If I were you, I would just understand the technicality behind. And by the way, the series of small fire story, you can find that on the internet. Read it for yourself. The legitimacy of the story is still one that's disputed. But I just like it because it points to just how technical. I think the Economics and Public Administration, you know, yeah, I think it was that the Economic and Public Administration, when they were looking at procurements, there's also an entire report on that. When they were looking at procurement, they looked at that 5-year-old shareholder.
Mm.
And one thing they pointed out was that, they may as well just say, look, if you're complaining about the age of a shareholder, we really want to help you. But the thing is, when we go to court, we want to point at a piece of legislation that we are relying on to make our point.
Mm.
And so far, not the Procurement Act, not the company law says anything about age limit. Now, even if we, you know, take for example, we humor you and we listen to you and we approach the court. We are just wasting the time because that case is going to be thrown out.
Yeah.
Because the question they will ask is, okay, show us the law that we have to use to prosecute this person. If there is no law, now that's why I remember my Bible literature now. Where there is no law, there is no sin.
True.
Yep.
There could probably be a sin, but the sin probably is not.
Yeah, unless you write a law.
People can't interpret the sin.
Because
they don't know what it actually means.
You know what's fascinating? You can write a piece of legislation that makes it illegal, but if it happened before you wrote that piece of legislation, that doesn't count.
Yeah.
It's only what happens after that piece of legislation.
Yeah.
So it's again, the technicality is amazing if you like sitting at home reading this stuff.
Yeah, because you can't bring in something new and then say, okay, let's backdate our court cases to try and look at what happened there. And then, everyone will tell you, but.
How far back are you going to go? That's the first question.
Yeah. This law only came about today. You can't turn around and say, let's look back now. You're supposed to look forward. Now, there's obviously also a nice thing, Helmut, in the last 9 minutes of today's discussion that comes out in terms of the comparison that the Standing Committee did in terms of looking at its peer. Even though it didn't meet its peer, which is the Ghanaian Committee on Constitutional, Legal and Parliamentary Affairs.
I have one question. Actually, I've had the question the whole day.
Yeah.
Didn't they communicate with their peers before leaving?
I don't know. It doesn't seem so because it doesn't say so in the report.
I know. I wouldn't put it in
the
eye.
They literally were told, no, these guys don't have time to see you. What? But we're actually coming here for them. But it's a good thing actually that they got to meet some of the commissions, the agencies of Ghana. Now, one thing that they note here specifically, which is technically almost, it speaks like a recommendation as well, is that in the Namibian context, so they're doing a comparison and a comparative analysis on the Namibian Parliamentary Committee of Constitutional Legal Affairs and the Ghanaian Committee on Constitutional Legal and Parliamentary Affairs. So they noted that the CLA has a broad mandate that covers all justice clusters nationally. Functions across the justice cluster overlap, resulting in a waste of resources and delays in investigating and completing critical issues, and that the current arrangements hinder the effective and efficient conduct and the efficient conducting of oversight by the CLA. But doesn't that sound similar to like Namibia? Doesn't it, Namut? Now, they note, however, the functions of the institutions,
yeah,
the agencies that they met, is that the functions are well coordinated in all the relevant institutions. In terms of Ghana's experience, the functions of all the relevant institutions are well aligned with clear coordination strategies and the sharing of information openly and transparently. And that all relevant institutions, including the Parliamentary Committee on Constitutional, Legal and Parliamentary Affairs, have a platform to review issues of concern and to determine progress and shortcomings as a team. However, there's always a however. The discussion obviously highlights the opposites that you and I have already touched on. The opposites being, they absorbed their ombudsman into a broader...
Then made it somewhat of a directory.
Yeah, a broader agency that has a broader reach over all aspects wherein every Ghanaian's life will be touched by these aspects.
Yeah.
The second scenario is that the law reform department...
Instead of putting it under the Ministry of Justice like we have.
No, instead of having a law reform department under the Ministry of Justice, have a law reform commission, an agency, independent, that helps with staying abreast of new developments in law. For example, Hamoud, how quickly do you think that agency would have sprang up if that 5-year-old shareholder discussion popped up?
Oof.
They actually would have come out and said, reviewed the necessary legislation, that would have existed.
Let's see, yeah. If there's a legislation that, that's fine, that doing this is illegal, then we go to court.
Yeah.
If there's none, well, then it ends here.
Yeah. And remember, it's a bunch of trained legal graduates or law graduates or whatever. People that should have a law degree behind them in order to look into the reform of laws. I mean, up until now, in a Namibian context, some of these parliamentarians in our case, they tried debating the discussion. It fell flat literally as quickly as it got up.
I would not raise that point in parliament. For one, first of all, it's embarrassing.
Secondly, there is no law.
That's the embarrassing part.
Yeah, because there is no law.
Yeah, because if they take your whole honorable to court now to explain to the judge which existing Namibian legislation they should use.
Yeah.
Which Namibian legislation that classifies being a 5-year shareholder as illegal. The thing is, as of now, like right now, you would really have to search, and I hardly doubt you'll find one.
Yeah.
That's the
probably,
easy, that's
on,
the
probably
thing.
On something like board of directors or what was the other thing? Yeah, but not even a shareholder.
I hardly doubt.
Shareholder is a position above a board of director.
Yeah, like the top guys at
the
economic food chain.
Yeah, the owner, the apex economic food chain owner. Uh-huh.
Who can be, they can decide to be, okay, you know what, I'm just going to be shareholder, or they can be shareholder and be on the board.
Yeah, which also exists, if you guys didn't know.
You know where I find the perfect explanation for that? Richard Wolff.
Yep.
Like, the man is a genius at explaining how the hierarchy of things, like, you know what? I don't care I don't care whether that company is east, west, north, south, all companies have this one thing in common, at least 90 to 100% of them.
Mm.
You have shareholders, board of directors, executives, managers, and then there's, minions. Well, he didn't use that.
Foot soldiers.
foot soldiers. understandably, the fruits of the institution. The priorities in the fruits of the institution are shareholders, because first of all, they are the ones that are forking out money to you know to invest in this to keep the to keep the institution running. So if something comes comes out of it, it goes to them, because if the investment turns out to be bogus, they are the ones that will lose the most. Like, okay, well, that's until Henry Ford was like, okay, shareholders, I think I've given you guys enough money for, you know, for your, you know, for your dividends. And we are now way above in terms of dividends, you know, in terms of dividends, we are way above our, above our competition. Can we just increase the salary of employees? This time the Dodge brothers were like, say that one more time.
No, they won't.
So they ended up suing each other in the court of Michigan. Yeah. Now, so one thing, one thing I came to learn in the case of Zambia and Namibia is, we have national parliament, we have national assembly, national council.
Yeah.
They are not bicameral, they are uni, they only have one. So,
no, but it does say we are bicameral.
Yeah, we are. They don't.
Oh yeah, they don't. Yeah.
They don't. This case of Ghana now is it's the opposite. You know, the flip side is a very interesting one, seeing that we have we have an independent ombudsman. For them, it's like, you know what? We tried it; it didn't work. Now, I don't think that basically means we have to do the exact same thing, like making the ombudsman being made a directorate in some ministry.
Mm.
I think it's about looking at what they have and then analyzing and seeing that, okay, you know what, can this work for us, or do we have to mold it in a whole different way?
Yeah.
And also, the way this report works is that, the ministry or SOE that report is written on is allowed to, is given, I think, about 3 or 6 months to adopt the recommendations from the report, whether in part or in whole. In other words, it's not a dictatorship. You're allowed to make so your changes here and there before adopting it.
Yeah. The concern obviously also comes about
ombudsman.
The concern obviously also comes about, Helmut. For example, I forgot to finish our discussion on digital rights and on consumer protection rights.
The GDPR.
In relation to the GDPR thing. Just to end before the ad break hits us. Is there an ad break? No.
One in 15 minutes. That's a business and economic segment problem, guys.
Yeah. So the dimension on that was literally that in Namibia, we already have people that are sending money internationally, cross-border, by doing payments to whoever, whichever e-commerce platform there is.
Yeah.
And we have no legislation, only a computer act, a computer evidence act that was amended and changed to the Electronic Transactions Act that falls under the Bank of Namibia and NAMFISA's particular purview and the Namibia Financial Intelligence Center that helps them combat, let's for example say, fraud perpetuated through a electronic means, in terms of trying to steal someone's money, stuff like that.
Like scamming, for example?
For example. But the discussion would then be a notion in terms of which ecosystem does it protect? Does it just protect the banking ecosystem, which is
the consumers of their services?
Or the customers, or the banking and their customers? And I could, in that discussion we even did last year, I could immediately see that, but this is something that just protects the banking sector. Not even the consumers is great, just the banking. So when it comes to things like, for example, what's the other word that the one they love using is digital rights. The other one is obviously about, data protection rights. Yes, that's the one, digital rights and data protection rights. And then cybersecurity in its essence, because we still have a cybersecurity task force, unfortunately, that is operating on a draft.
It's not operating.
It's not? The draft is not there. It hasn't been signed in yet.
Yeah, which is why I'm saying it's kind of difficult to sue someone on a bill. But look.
Oh, no, it's not a draft. It's a bill, yeah. It's a bill. So, yeah. There is literally no law that cyber response task force can even leverage in their right to try and protect Namibian internet users even.
That would be a very interesting court case, though.
What? The first thing is they first have to catch the people, Hamoud. So how?
Let's just humor this whole situation and say they caught the people and the lawyer there stands up, like, you know,
and says
on behalf of the state that these people, according to this bill, Your Honor, they were violating, I don't know, the bill, and so. Man, that's a lot of questions.
This bill is not an act, Your Honor.
Yeah, that's.
And then the first thing the judge says, "Yeah, you're right. It's not an act. So why are we here?" And then the next question would be, "Yeah, ask the guys that caught my clients." And that's ultimately where we find ourselves.
Oh yeah, land of the brave. Well,
yeah.
I mean, what defines bravery than taking someone to court on a bill? It didn't happen. Just my imagination going wild here. So that brings us to the end of Home Run for today. And until tomorrow, same time, same place on your favorite radio station, Eagle FM. That brings us to the end of Home Run. It's important, guys. I cannot stress this enough. The legal system we use is very, 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 very technical. A lot of people find themselves in court. Usually, look, what you did here, according to you, what you did was you broke in someone's house and then you stole their TV. Take here, for example, you are caught, then the TV is taken back to the owner and they have the right paperwork to prove that the TV is theirs. And when you find yourself to court, you're in court, they give you, you find out that you are being charged, the list of your charges is, is going 3 pages and you're like, when did I do all this? Well, because according to you, you just broke into a house. Mm. But what they are going to factor in is trespassing, damage to property, and that's when you realize that, well, the technicalities is not something that a lot of us are aware of. And I'm not asking you to be Sisina Manji or Kadila Momo. I'm just saying get the basics.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, in the very same way that if you have a car, you don't have to be a mechanical engineer. At least know how to change your own oil. Or, how to put on a spare wheel. You know, basic things like that.
But I don't know how to change oil.
You don't know how to change oil?
No.
A spare tire?
Yes.
You're good. Now.
Check water, yes. Check oil, yes.
Yeah, check oil. Check oil. Because changing, how often do you do that? I know it depends from one, from a car to model or type of a car to different type.
You have to do that probably every year.
Probably. Probably. Yeah, no, probably is the right word to use because it's not a one size fits all.
Yeah.
Yeah. Checking is fine. Checking is fine because there's a type of a car that one guy was demonstrating, I think, on TikTok on how difficult it is to get, especially German models. Mm. Or more like German brands. Germans have a way of making things sophisticated, at least that's one of the memes that you find in the mechanical engineering world. That, there was one picture showcasing a window, a car window rolling up and down mechanism. One from a German car had like 1,000 parts. One from a Japanese car had like 5 parts, but they both served the same purpose.
There's another one, also the same meme, where the one goes like, German suspension has like, you just see a whole bunch of arms, but you got, it looks like a jigsaw puzzle. Yeah,
metals overlapping.
And then when you have to look at Japanese suspension, it's just like one rod, supporting rod, and another supporting rod, and that's it. There you go. Serving the purpose.
And they are wishing you, what's that? Sayonara.
Yeah. And they go like, don't worry.
You'll be fine.
No, there's another one that also goes like, If you drive a certain particular European and American car to a certain point, the car engine breaks down. And the guy with the Toyota goes like, your engines break down.
Wait, your engines break down? You've got to love the Japanese on this one.
But like, I was like, your engines break down? Yeah.
Well, these things break down. Oh, nice. 7 minutes into business and economic segment. Well, this is where we take off and wish you a good day until tomorrow. Same time, same place on Eagle FM. From me, y'all have a good one.
Stay tuned, guys, for the rest of your evening in our company, obviously. Good evening.
Did you know that in Namibia, over 1.4 million people use their mobile device to access the internet? So why not meet your current and potential customers where they already are? With over 600,000 cumulative users around the world, between the Eagle FM and Imba mobile apps, Eagle Media House has the perfect digital platforms for you to advertise your business, upcoming events, weddings, vacancies, funerals, or any other announcement that you have on their digital billboards in their mobile applications. Put your ad on our digital billboards, and with one tap of the screen, lead users directly to an address of your choosing. For more information, contact Hende at 081-410-9077. That's 081-410-9077.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.